This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents The Mortal Mage, Book 3 of The Mortal Mage series, written by B.T. Narrow, performed by Simon Vance. Chapter 1. Their twisted journey had provided them with many paths, but only one remained. Dessel wanted to trust that Basin had sent them through a portal to this glacier to keep them and the precious Ackerel safe, but the black citadel in front of them appeared as safe and comforting as a bed of nails, and that was if they ignored the field of human bones in their way. Someone chose to lay down all these bones here, or a creature devoured the remnants of the bodies that were once here, Dessel told his two comrades. Both seem unlikely. But I don't know what else could explain this. Neither Beatrix nor Kernich offered an answer. There were no clothes among the bones. Most were skulls of various sizes and shapes, some with chips, others with cracks, and many with entire chunks missing, usually along the top of the skull. There were a few that were still completely whole, but all of them had belonged to a living person. There were so many. So many. Dessel didn't know where he and his two comrades were now. He might be able to figure it out if he wasn't so worried about Lyda and her father. They hadn't made it through the portal. Surely they had been captured by Fathol's elves by now. But what will Fathol do with them? Dessel wished he had time before taking the portal to ask what Basin had planned for their group here in this frozen kingdom. It seemed obvious that they were to visit the citadel looming ahead of them, as it was the only landmark in sight, but without anyone in their group knowing a single thing about it, not even the Princess of Kiro, who Dessel expected to be the most knowledgeable about other kingdoms, how were they supposed to know what to do? Should they bring the Ackerel to the citadel where it might be safe, or would it be taken away from them if they did? They would have to make the most cautious choices of their limited options. "We should hide the Ackerel somewhere before someone in the citadel sees us," Dessel said. "And it should remain hidden until we figure out who we're dealing with and why Basin sent us here." The princess and the warrior accompanying Dessel still appeared to think they were elsewhere, as they walked with their heads bowed, the last battle all too fresh. It was the same for Dessel, as gruesome memories of swords impaling living, breathing, screaming elves and men stampeded across his train of thought. But then Kernich stopped suddenly and lifted his head as if to really survey the land. He was silent for a breath before he cursed. Dessel took this as his chance to try once again to contact Lyda through the other plane. After everything that had happened, it was difficult for him to leave the physical world with his mind, akin to trying to fall asleep while wide awake. Kernich seemed to say something to Beatrix as Dessel slipped away and entered the ocean of sizzling energy that sloshed and moved in tiny waves as far as he could see. There wasn't much he could feel in his distracted state, but he reached out for Lyda nonetheless. He cast his net as far as it could go and eventually felt her. Lyda's presence was quiet and still, as difficult to detect as a flake of snow on a frozen river, but he found her nonetheless, and could tell that there was no message to read from her. Dessel fell out of the plane, stumbling as he re-entered the physical world. Kernich steadied him.
"You all right?"
Dessel nodded. The three of them walked around the frozen river in their way. Dessel couldn't help but look for a flake of snow to test his analogy, but there were none to find.
"Did you hear us, Dessel?"
Kernich asked. "No. What did you say?"
"We think we see a cave there."
The warrior pointed toward the base of the mountains nearby. There were two ridges, one on either side. With both covered in ice and snow, it would be a difficult climb for Dessel to get over and impossible for anyone else. That meant that the quickest way out of this glacier was past the citadel, where a white forest looked almost like a sanctuary in comparison to the pointed towers of the fortress, which lay at the end of a long bridge. Dessel eventually recognized the small opening of a cave that Kernich had pointed out, but he also noticed the warrior's injuries then. In the recent battle, an elf had jumped on Kernich's back and driven a dagger into his shoulder. His armor was shredded around the gash while it was scratched and dented everywhere else. Kernich had cuts down his arms and the back of his neck, his blood still wet. Dessel felt the sting from his similar wounds every time the biting wind came around for another attack. Beatrix appeared to have fared better. The psychic had spent much of the first battle with the Maros, paining any of the flying creatures that came close to her or Basin. She apparently wasn't touched in the second battle. Battles. It had been one after another. It felt as though Dessel had done nothing but fight since he'd left his mother's tavern. But they had finally obtained the Ackerel. Now all they needed were enough apple vines, and they could threaten the warring kings with destroying their castles. It should finally bring about peace. It was unfortunate that Dessel was more lost than ever in this glacier. Basin was supposed to be here with Lyda and Adria. He had a plan for them here. Hopefully that would become clear as soon as Dessel's group spoke with the leader of this citadel. It wasn't a long walk to the cave, but each of the enormous 6 bags they hauled was filled with heavy Ackerel metal. They'd melted it with a toxic substance, collected it in bottles, and put each bottle in a bag. Now it was up to only 3 people to carry the 6 of them, and Dessel had no idea how far they would have to go to return to Kiro. Beatrix was a powerful psychic. A woman in her mid-20s with enough strength and courage to make every dainty princess before her seem like an anomaly. But her strength was limited to her mind. She couldn't support more than 1 bag on her small frame, leaving the other 5 to Kurnich and Dessel. The large warrior took 3, one on his back and one with each hand, dragging them across the field of rattling bones. Dessel carried 1 bag on his back and held the other, taking most of the weight onto his arms. They ached from fatigue, but at least the bag provided a bit of warmth.
"Shall I help for a little while?" Beatrix asked Kurnich.
"I can make it to the cave," he grunted.
The 3 of them could easily be spotted if anyone was looking down from the citadel with a spyglass. It might mean the end of everything if someone then came to investigate what they were about to hide in the cave, but Dessel didn't see the point in worrying if there was nothing he could do about it. It wasn't as if they could go any faster, and they weren't about to stand out here, freezing, to wait for night. Eventually they arrived at the cave. It wasn't much taller than the large warrior, but it soon stretched to be wider than most houses in Kavel, the small town where Dessel grew up. The only light came from the opening behind them, and soon they found themselves in complete darkness. Dessel gave his bag of Ackerel to Beatrix so he could focus on making light without burning himself by gathering a cluster of bastial energy to hover a foot in front of his hands. He thought he sensed movement of some kind ahead, but there was nothing to see except jagged walls. They went a little while farther before Beatrix set down her bag.
"This cave could go on for miles. It's best we separate here."
She seemed to be speaking to Dessel. What had she and Kurnich said while Dessel was focused on reaching Lyda in the other plane? "You both decided it should be me who stays." Dessel said it as a statement of fact, not a question.
"Yes," Kurnich confirmed. "Beatrix has to go because of her psychic ability, and I would be of more use protecting her than staying here alone. You can hide the Ackerel in the walls and focus your full attention on trying to reach Lyda. We need to know what Basin hoped to accomplish by sending us here."
"And you know how to take care of yourself in the wilderness better than Kurnich," Beatrix said with some hesitance. "In case we don't return."
"In case we don't return immediately," Kurnich specified. "Ouch!"
He jumped and pulled up his right pant leg. A small beetle, round and glossy, stuck to the side of his leg. Kurnich's skin stretched as the warrior pulled the beetle off. He let out another yelp when the beetle finally came loose, then cursed as he noticed a trickle of blood.
"The bestial hell are these things?"
He turned the squirming creature around in front of his eyes. It was a hair longer than it was wide, 2 round carapaces making up its body. Its face was too small to see its mandibles, but they must have been powerful to cause Kurnich to bleed. "Fee beetles," Dessel figured. "They're carnivores, if you haven't already figured that out. Their presence means we're probably somewhere in Goldrum." "Good. We might be able to make it to the coast and take a boat back to Avira."
"How far is the coast?"
Kurnich dropped the beetle and turned his boot on top of it.
"Given the ice and mountains around us, I'd say pretty far."
"Then why is this good?"
"Because we could have found ourselves in many places much farther. Greenedge is huge."
"Oh." Dessel realized something that sent a needle down his spine.
"The fee beetle might also explain the bones."
It took Kurnich and Beatrix a moment to understand what Dessel was implying. The 3 of them looked deeper into the cave in a long moment of silence.
"How many do you think there are?"
Beatrix asked Dessel.
"Could be thousands to consume the human flesh from all the bones we crossed through."
"That still wouldn't explain what the bodies were doing there,"
Kurnich brought up.
"There must have been a battle. Then the fee beetles had their feast."
There was some doubt in his voice.
"I think you're right."
Dessel hated to consider the alternative, that so many people had been killed by these beetles and then devoured, though he wasn't completely sure that a battle was a better omen. If the king of the citadel was at war with someone, he would want the Ackerel even more.
Was there really no better place for Dezzel to hide the precious metal than in this cave with possibly thousands of flesh-eating beetles? Kernish and Beatrix had empathy in their tired eyes as they gazed at him.
"Perhaps I should be the one to stay," the psychic suggested. "I could control the fee beetles if they attack."
"No," Dezzel said with a resigned sigh. "You and Kernish should go to the Citadel. Your psyche will be of more use there than I could be. Besides, I'll be fine here."
"Could you hide the Akaral in these walls?"
Kernish asked. "It might take a couple hours, but I should be able to. When do the two of you expect to return?"
"Immediately,"
Kernish said without delay, but then he stopped to think.
"But it could take until sundown if we must wait to speak to someone."
The Citadel wasn't a long distance away from here, except its location made the trek somewhat difficult. Kernish and Beatrix would have to venture up mountainous hills to make it to the start of the bridge, then follow the bridge partially back the way they'd come. And there was always the chance they wouldn't be allowed inside.
"You should take a bottle of Akaral with you in case you need a gift," Dezzel fished one out. "We still have enough to create an explosion once we find enough apple vines."
He handed the bottle to Beatrix. It was more cracked than most others in the bags, enough for bastial energy to get through to the Akaral, which had begun to glow. The metal trapped in the other bottle still looked just like melted and then hardened silver, now curved to match the contours of the bottle containing it. Still valuable, but without a glow to prove that it absorbed bastial energy, it would be unable to pass as Akaral. Beatrix gave the glowing bottle back to Dezzel.
"We should be fine. I have a couple gold coins that are worth just as much in Greenedge as in our home. If a gift is needed, I can use them."
"We shall be going,"
Kernish said.
"What if you don't return by tomorrow?" Dezzel asked.
Beatrix and Kernish looked at one another before Kernish turned to Dezzel.
"Then you should come for us."
Dezzel took it as a compliment. They trusted him enough to help them in case something happened.
"But no matter what," Beatrix added, "keep the Akaral hidden where you think it will be most safe. If we lose it all of this will be for nothing."
Dezzel nodded. As soon as they left, he let out his light to relieve himself from the strain of holding bastial energy together. It was dark and cold in the cave, but the silent sanctuary provided just enough warmth from the outside for him to at least keep from shivering. He got to work softening the nearby wall and scooping out the smooth rock. He was glad for the distraction until his hunger started to win the competition against his concentration. He made holes along the wall, stashing each bag separately. It was impossible to put the rock back so that it matched the rest of the wall, but he didn't expect anyone to investigate closely enough to tell. By the time he was done hiding all six bags, he checked outside the cave to see if he could still see his comrades, or if anyone else was in sight. He saw nothing but mountains, snow, bones, and the frozen river. He ventured out toward it, toting his only possession besides his sword, a water pouch that had gone empty hours ago. Water was easy to manipulate in comparison to rock. He couldn't change its temperature, but he could convince it to shift to a liquid with ease. The freezing water was too painful, sliding down his throat to come as a relief, but it did help his hunger a bit. He drank and filled his pouch, then returned to the cave. It was surprisingly difficult to find where he'd altered the wall. He'd done a better job hiding the Akaral than he realized. Eventually he found the changes to the smooth texture, glanced around to ensure there were no hungry fee beetles looking for a snack, then sat with his back to the wall and shut his eyes. He didn't know when or how exactly, but he would hear from Lyda eventually. He knew so. He drifted in and out of sleep, visions of the other plane coming in flashes. He felt someone reaching for him, probably Lyda. He stretched his mind toward her, the feeling like trying to remember a name, but he seemed so far from her. It felt impossible for them to reach each other. Perhaps they were just too far physically. After slumbering for what felt to be a couple hours, he rose and headed deeper into the cave. He might only find fee beetles, but he couldn't ignore the chance of encountering something else, hopefully something edible. Then again, the fee beetles themselves could be thought of as food. Dezzel had eaten a beetle before, when he was a child foraging with his father during one of their adventures out of Kiro. He couldn't recall how it tasted, only that the head, legs, and shell were to be removed before popping it in his mouth. He started to look for them on the ground as he continued deeper. The cave was less cold here, making a better resting point, if Dezzel hadn't started to sense movement around him. He thought he heard scampering up where the walls met the layered roof. There were plenty of places up there for the fee beetles to hide. He really didn't like the thought of them coming down on his head.
Deeper into the cave, he caught sight of holes as big as his fists. He investigated the first group of them he came across by standing in front of them and making light. They appeared to be tiny tunnels that turned upward. He didn't know what to make of that. The size of the holes increased as he went farther. Warning signs flared in his mind as he was certain he heard the movement of many beetles. It was most alarming how the sound came from not just in front of him, but also from above and behind, and still he had yet to see a single beetle since the one that had bitten Kernich. He was more than ready to turn back, but something compelled him to keep going. Chapter 2 Beatrix made her way across the bridge, beside Kernich, both of them shivering with their arms crossed. She didn't have the same number of wounds as he did, the worst seemingly at his shoulder. She could feel from his energy that it gave him the most pain. She would not complain about the cold, as it did not compare to what Kernich suffered from silently. She didn't know what to hope for regarding this citadel. She would appreciate if they were given food and a hot bath, but that was unlikely even with her royal bloodline. There was supposed to be only one king of Goldrum, Aramis Thackeray, who seemed like a good enough king to Beatrix from what she knew about him. He had refused to get involved in any of the wars in Ovira, even when another Thackeray had started the one before now. But even if he ruled over all of Goldrum, Ramus probably wasn't here in this citadel. Someone else was king to this frozen land. A man who clearly valued his bridge and his citadel. Both were in such good condition that Beatrix couldn't tell whether they were constructed in the last few years or were managed with the utmost scrutiny. The stone beneath her feet was smooth and even slick. She supposed her boots would slip if she ran and stopped suddenly like she used to do as a child. Her eldest brother Alifon could slide farther around the castle grounds. He always made it into a competition, while she was just trying to have fun. Alifon probably had survived the recent battle against the elves. She'd witnessed most of his men retreating, long before any of the Wind Knights had shown signs of giving up. Alifon had probably been toward the back, ready to run the moment he was in danger. He'd always been a coward. My father would still be alive if it wasn't for him. But the real blame falls on Jimin Rofters. The traitorous councilman had put a lethal dosage of poison in Alifon's hands, then convinced him it would only sicken the king, not kill. Alifon would control the army while their father was ill, proving his ability to rule and retain command alongside their father once he recovered. Alifon's goal was clear, to prove he could control Tenred once they took the territory. He wanted it for himself rather than let it be passed down to Beatrix as their father had planned. Alifon would have still gained control of Kira once their father died, but he'd never been a patient man. Beatrix had seen plenty of evidence that her brother regretted his choices after all the horrors that his behavior had brought onto their family, but it was probably too late to save him now, even if she wanted to. Jimin will find some way to kill Alifon and frame someone else for it. This would be easy for someone like Jimin, who could lie to psychics without them knowing. However, that was presuming Kiro would win the war. Both men would be executed if Tenred came out victorious. But if Beatrix was able to put an end to the war before one side could win, before one king ruled both territories with uncontested power, she would bring about the justice that everyone deserved. Jimin would be tried and executed for the murder of her father. Her brother would be imprisoned for years. She gasped as she realized something. She might be crowned queen in this scenario. The thought had never entered her mind until now, and she didn't care for it. She just wanted to get the Akril back to Basin in Kiro and let him continue to lead her in this quest, as he's done so far. However, he was unlikely to still be in Kiro, given that the elves had prevailed with their superior numbers. The leader of the elves, Fathol, was probably taking Basin and Lyda back to their village in Meriyk this very moment. Fathol would allow them to be traded only for the Akril. Beatrix might never see them again.
"Is something wrong?"
Kernich asked. He was always so attentive to her. It used to bother her because the lust in his energy used to be as strong as a pungent odour, but it had shifted into a deep caring that actually brought comfort to her.
"I'm worried about Basin and Lyda," she told Kernich.
"There will be a time to worry about them after we get through this. We need a sign for you to give me if you sense someone lying."
"I'll scratch my ear, like this."
Kernich watched her scratch the bottom of her earlobe, but his gaze soon shifted to her eyes. She saw nothing but courage in his brown eyes, but she could feel a strong hidden fear from his energy.
It matched her own. They were too vulnerable in this place, with no plan. They couldn't even be certain as to where they were. At least they weren't the only ones on this long bridge. No less than 20 people in heavy coats travelled in the same direction, usually on a wagon with one or two horses at the front. Some wagons contained boxes or barrels, while others had their contents displayed openly, like animal pelts or bundles of wheat or hay. Others were coming back from the citadel with no horse, no wagon, and really nothing but one or two bags they carried on their back or in their hands. Beatrix tried to stop one man passing by the other way.
"Excuse me, sir."
He didn't even slow down, or even glance at her.
"Excuse me," she tried again. "Why are people visiting this citadel?"
He had continued to ignore her. She reached out with her mind for an examination of his energy before he was too far. He was angry and hopeless, as if he'd given up on something recently. Halfway across the bridge, they approached one other man going in the opposite direction. Beatrix tried to stop him by asking him to wait. She even used psyche to attempt to make him interested, but his depression was too severe to alter. At least he looked at her and Kernich for a moment, although his expression was malicious, as if scanning them for something to steal. She kept quiet after that, letting him go on his way, his desperation too dangerous. The size of the double doors grew as Beatrix and Kernich came closer, until they were twice the height of the doors to the keep she was accustomed to passing through back at her former home. This citadel was different than her castle in almost every way. There was no city surrounding it, nothing but mountains, ice, and snow for miles. It was made from black stone, with pointed towers high enough to offer a vantage point over the natural barrier of mountains running parallel. The only commonality between this citadel and her castle was how the powerful structure would make any smart man think twice about attacking, no matter how large his army. Enemies to this kingdom would be foolish to enter. Beatrix hoped she wasn't an enemy. There was only one guard in front of the black double doors to greet her and Kernich. Across his shoulders was a thick pelt white as snow. The fur of another animal, black as soot, covered his torso. He kept his sword unsheathed, its tip resting against the edge of the bridge. He had a long face with a square jaw, and his brushed back hair brought all focus to his harsh gaze that he set upon Beatrix. He looked like a rapacious man, eager to take anything he could from them without offering much in return. His bastial energy confirmed that he cared about nothing.
"I'm Beatrix Estlender," she said, "and this is Kernich Chulder. We came all the way from Ovira to meet with your leader."
He cocked his head, his gaze shifting to Kernich before falling back down to Beatrix.
"Will you bring us to him?"
she asked, holding in her annoyance at his silence. The stranger stared at her. There was nothing in his eyes besides greed.
"What do you want in return?"
Beatrix asked in a flat tone. He didn't respond. Beatrix could feel boredom.
"Can you speak?"
she asked. He didn't bother to nod or shake his head.
"It's been a difficult journey to get here," she snapped. "Can't you see we are wounded and freezing? We have gone the entire night without sleep or food and without a bite to eat today as well. I'm the princess of the kingdom of Kiro, and I demand to speak to your leader."
The man folded his arms. With the doors closed and probably barred behind him, paining him with psyche would do nothing but provide her with a moment of satisfaction. The guard pointed his thumb up with a flick of his wrist. Beatrix looked up to see the slanted wall above, with arrow slits that allowed archers to shoot down at them. She felt a burst of anger from Kernich's energy as her trusted companion drew his sword.
"You threaten the princess now?"
he questioned.
"Kernich."
She put her hand on his arm and took out her money pouch with her free hand. Kernich let his sword arm rest as the silent guard reached out with his palm upturned.
"Oh, so this you'll respond to?"
Kernich thrust his sword back in its sheath, then stepped toward the other man and pushed him by his shoulder.
"You say nothing to our request for an audience, for shelter and warmth, and yet you hold out your hand like a child asking for a treat as soon as she takes out her money pouch."
Kernich pushed the uncooperative stranger again, the warrior's sudden fury already beyond a level that Beatrix could control with psyche. There was a flash of movement, and Kernich grabbed the guard's hand to stop a knife Beatrix hadn't seen until then. The tip dug into Kernich's armor at the center of his chest. He twisted the man's wrist, the knife falling as the guard finally let out a sound, a yelp of pain. It would have satisfied Beatrix if she wasn't so worried that Kernich was about to be shot.
"The archer,"
she warned Kernich as she looked up and tried to see through the narrow slit in the stone. She felt one person there, along with a hint of aggression. She could pain whoever it was, but then her psychic ability would be known, and she would lose the upper hand at detecting lies.
"Get behind me, Beatrix,"
Kernich said as he pulled the guard close, spun him around and wrapped an arm around the man's neck to hold him still. The guard struggled for breath as Beatrix moved behind Kernich.
"We're here to see the king,"
the big warrior announced.
"Peacefully," Beatrix added. "We have important business for him from the land of Kiro in Orvira, and this man refuses to let us inside."
"You must pay to enter,"
the guard managed as he wheezed.
"Everyone must pay with something." "I'm glad you found your voice," Kernich said.
"So all those sent away must have nothing to offer. They will die in this harsh land, and whoever controls this area doesn't care." What still remained a mystery to her was what the people gained by trading food or coin for entrance. Were they allowed to stay in this citadel? She looked over her shoulder. A few people waited behind. Very far behind, as they watched.
"We will pay by sparing your life," Kernich said. "Tell them to open the doors and I will release you. Or say nothing and I will use your corpse as a shield from arrows as the princess and I turn around and walk back across the bridge, or I will leave your body to turn to ice. Which would you prefer?"
Kernich tightened his hold. The guard gasped before he told them,
"You may enter."
"The doors are not bolted?" Beatrix asked.
"No."
"How do we know we won't be shot?"
"Because I will tell them not to as I take you to King Carolto myself."
It might have surprised another person how easily this man had been broken, but it was no surprise to Beatrix. Kernich already scared most people whenever he became aggressive, and her twisting of the man's energy had made him utterly terrified. He practically ran to the doors when Kernich released him. The door screamed in complaint as he opened it just enough for them to fit through.
"What about us?"
someone called from behind. The guard ushered Beatrix and Kernich into the citadel without responding and slammed the door behind them.
"Give me my dagger back."
He held out his hand in the same way he had before.
"I'm keeping it until we meet with the king,"
Kernich replied. The guard looked up before Beatrix had a chance to check their surroundings. An archer stood on a platform above with a clear shot down.
"Well?"
asked the man who'd brought them inside, fear and anger making his voice shaky.
"What?"
the hooded archer replied. There was enough light for Beatrix to see a grin upon his mouth.
"You know what, you nub,"
said the guard.
"Are you going to?"
Beatrix would have been worried if she didn't feel pure amusement from the archer's energy. She showed Kernich a knowing look so he wouldn't panic either. The archer said,
"I'm not going to tell the king that I killed a princess from Avira who came here on business."
"They didn't pay,"
the guard's tone was hinting.
"They're not crossing through,"
the archer countered.
"So that's why people come here with offerings. They must desire land on the other side of these mountains. What kind of king prevents his people from traveling? He extorts his own citizens."
Their escort cursed the archer's mother as he turned to lead Beatrix and Kernich deeper into the citadel. Although the entranceway was tall, it was narrow. Stone walls tunneled them in, though there were walkways above where the citadel opened to reveal rows of stairs and railings. The tunnel was straight and short, leading to a wall of carvings. It depicted a battle unfamiliar to Beatrix, one of fantasy, no doubt, with six-legged horses and monstrously huge lions fighting amidst men. There was no opening to get through the wall, forcing Beatrix and Kernich to follow their escort around the pointless thing. Some of the walls rose up to become enormous pillars, supporting the walkways that were heavily in use. Footsteps thudded, but there was an emptiness to the air, a void that voices filled in Beatrix's home. She had to stop thinking of Kiro's castle in that way.
"It's as much my home now as this place is."
Kernich asked the guard,
"Why are there so many bones out there?"
He didn't answer. Beatrix had a different question.
"Where are we?"
But more than that, she needed to know what Basin planned for them to do here. First, she would have to speak with this king without saying anything that might make him want their ackerel. If it was anyone else besides Dessel waiting back with the precious metal, she might have been worried, but she trusted him to take care of it and himself.
"The bones belong to men who are enemies of your king," Beatrix guessed.
She could feel from her escort's energy that her words were true.
"Not all died there, but their naked bodies were discarded in that place so they could be eaten by flea beetles," she continued.
and so their bones will remain as a reminder for anyone who tries to stand against your king again. It was true. She nodded to Kernich as the guard kept his back to them, but she was missing something, sensing that the man wanted to correct her.
Pay me, and you will hear the rest.
Beatrix didn't need to waste her precious gold coins on this boor. One question would give her the answer of who these enemies were. Are there women's bones among the men's out there? Yes. She could feel from his energy. It wasn't the word yes that came to her, for specific thoughts such as that were impossible to sense. It was how the pattern of human energy differed between agreement and disagreement. Women's bones, in addition to men's, meant they were rebels, not an army of another kingdom. The people of Greenedge were different from those in her home continent in a few ways. Psyche hadn't become public knowledge until 2 decades ago, so they had very few people trained in the art of energy manipulation. The other was that they often reserved roles of combat for their men. Women in Greenedge would fight only when it meant something to them personally, like when their king forbade them from travelling to more fertile land so they could feed their children. Beatrix heard voices growing louder as she followed their perturbed escort through the citadel. The man eventually turned into what Beatrix thought would be a throne room. She appeared to be right, only she hadn't anticipated the hundreds of people sitting on benches along the sides. Their chatter quieted as she froze. Their escort headed toward a man who must be king. His throne was stone, as dark as the black walls and ceiling. She couldn't get a good look at him past the 3 people fidgeting in front of him, standing as if on trial with their wrists tied together as well as their ankles. "Should we be here at this time?" Beatrix asked the guard before he was too far to hear her. He ignored her as he walked around the 3 people. Beatrix couldn't focus on his energy any longer as the entire crowd stared at her and Kernich. They must know each other well enough to identify that she and Kernich didn't belong. It was usually impossible to discern any one person's energy patterns, their emotions, among such a crowd, unless she was close to her target, but this was different. There was one emotion that the entire crowd felt so strongly that it was easier to tell what they wanted than if they'd been dogs salivating while staring at a steak. Every single man and woman wanted desperately to leave this room. She spotted no children, which likely meant that what was to come would be gruesome.
"Beatrix," Kernich asked, no doubt wondering what she could tell from Psyche.
"We came at a bad time."
Before she could figure out if they should leave, King Carolto called to them.
"Foreigners, come forward."
Chapter 3 Dessel finally came to a hole in the cave that was at eye level. He could have climbed up the wall earlier for a look inside one of the higher halls, but if something was going to jump out, he would rather his feet be on the ground. It was either courage or stupidity that brought him this far into the cave, with his sense of danger flaring. He would soon find out. He could hear movement around him, but was still unable to see anything. They must be in the walls. He needed to see what he was dealing with before he went much farther. This hole was large enough for him to stick his head and even one shoulder into it if he was mad enough to try. He controlled a cluster of bastial energy with his mind, telling it to hover above the hole. It provided him with a nice blanket of heat as well, though the strain on his mind wasn't worth using it only for warmth. There was nothing he could see in the hole before it turned out of sight, so he stood and waited, listening to the sound of tapping and clicking. A rush of noise sent him back a step, squeaks and clicks coming from the hole. It looked as if a wave of black lifted up from the base of the hole and spread along the wall. He could make out the individual fee beetles only when they jumped at him from the wall. One landed on his arm as he backed away. He swatted it off, his focus broken. The bastial energy dispersed, leaving him in complete darkness. He gathered more, to see the tiny army of fee beetles on the ground headed for his boots. There was only one way to go to avoid them, deeper into the cave. He ran and found them to be quite slow as they gave chase. Dessel wondered if it was the light that let them know where he was, or if they could smell his flesh. Now was not the time to test a theory, however. He needed light. With the cave widening, Dessel began to feel drafts of cold air. The holes on the walls were larger here, some big enough to fit his entire body. He would turn around and head back, soon enough, unsure why he was still venturing on. Part of him was curious to see if anything awaited him at the end of the cave. But another part of him already knew something was ahead, and that it probably wasn't friendly.
He headed down the middle of the cave where he heard the least of the swarming beetles. Staying away from the walls was the only way to keep his fear at bay. He couldn't tell what it was that he felt exactly, but his gut told him to stay away from it. He started to feel sickly. At first he panicked, wondering if the air was poisoned with some toxin. But he let out his light, gathered his breath, and realized that he was able to regain his strength after a quick rest. So he went on. The noise of moving beetles halted him several times as it came and went in loud waves. He checked the ground, walls, and ceiling around him each time, only to find a few crawling around the holes as if unsure whether to enter. None of them seemed aware of him anymore, though he was certain that would change if he got too close. It did seem as if they'd smelled him earlier, after all, for the illumination of his gathered bastial energy was the only light in the cavern, and it did nothing to attract them now. The cave grew wider still, until he could no longer see the walls from the center. Crooked pillars blocked his path, many covered with beetles. He took wide turns as he felt himself getting weaker the closer he came to the end. A thud startled him. He saw movement across the ground, a ball of beetles rolling, but as some fell off, Dezzel caught sight of what this thing really was. A hare, still alive and hopping around, was trying to free itself from the fee beetles attached to its little limbs. Dazzle started toward it, unsure what he would do, but dozens of fee beetles got there first and covered every inch of fur. The ball rolled toward Dazzle's boots. He backed away before the fee beetles caught his scent. With sickening crunches, the fee beetles took the hare apart and carried their grotesque treasure deeper into the cave. Many marched with tufts of bloody fur sticking up from their little heads. Their mouths certainly were strong, many carrying hunks of flesh as big as they were. Dazzle tried not to listen to the sounds of them devouring everything except the bones. He kept a safe distance as he followed them. The sides of the cave rounded toward each other. This must finally be the end. The ground itself seemed to be moving as countless beetles crawled around. On top of them was one many times larger than the others, about the length of Dazzle's forearm. Its long body made up almost its entire length, with an arrow-like head at the end. With long legs, it seemed capable of getting around quickly, but it stayed put instead to feast on pieces of flesh shoved in front of its face by the hundreds of beetles swarming around it. Dazzle felt weak, as if he had a fever, but he figured this queen couldn't be the cause. With fear coming out of his throat in whispered exclamations and curses, he hastily looked around. In one corner, there were no fee beetles. They all stayed away from something that Dazzle couldn't see from where he stood. He edged closer, watching the ground to put his boot where the least amount of beetles roamed. There was something black gathered in the corner. It seemed to run up the wall, possibly even head into one of the holes. It was unimaginably dark, appearing just like a shadow even with Dazzle's light. An apple vine, he hoped. What else could it be? He edged closer, but a sudden pain to the back of his leg made him shout. He almost lost his focus on the bastial energies. He lifted up his pant leg to find a single fee beetle attached to his skin. Two more were climbing up his boots. He slapped them off as more started up his foot. The first held onto him tightly, pinching him as he grabbed it and pulled. Pain shot up his other leg. The light went out. He panicked and started to run, hopefully back the way he'd come. They bit his legs with ferocity, needles sliding deeper the more he let them gnaw freely. Soon he stopped and made light. He lifted up his pant legs and shrieked at the black covering him. In a flurry, he swiped, grabbed, and battered them off him. More crawled onto his boots before he was done. He ran farther, then stopped again to free his legs from the little monsters. He kept this up at a frantic pace. There were fewer beetles on his legs the more he ran, but even a single one biting him was painful. Eventually he made it back to the entrance and turned round to watch the ground and walls. He checked his legs as he waited. Trickles of blood ran down. The wounds were painful but shallow. He would be fine. More than the pain, it was their unstoppable urge to eat his flesh that disturbed him. He waited an hour before he let himself relax. Only two fee beetles came after him during that time. He grabbed them and pulled their little heads off. He slumped against the inner wall, his legs stinging, and decided he would wait here for Beatrix and Kernich to return. The psychic should be able to control the creatures, even if there were so many of them. Apple vines. Dazzle shook his fist in victory. This is what Basin must have wanted them to find. With Apple and Ackerel, they could finally start building a device that would threaten the warring kingdoms with explosions. They could finally end this war, as they'd intended to do from the start.
But if the apple in this cave was all Basin wanted them to find, what did it mean for Beatrix and Kernich, who had gone to the Citadel? Should Dessel go after them? It was too late now. They would already be inside, or they would be heading back to him. So he waited, and waited, trying to ignore the hunger pains, which felt worse than the sting of his leg wounds. Eventually he fell asleep. He awoke startled, looking around for attacking fee-beetles. Only the wind was there to greet him, whistling as it passed by the outside of the cave. He checked on the softened and then hardened again stone where he'd hidden the bags of ackerel. No one had come and tried to hack away the rock. He got up and looked outside the cave, across the field of bones, mostly because there was nothing else to see. The wind howled, chilling him instantly. He was not dressed for this weather. With no signs of life, he headed back into the cave. Still tired, he closed his eyes and caught up on some more sleep. By the time he awoke, it was night. He stood and stretched.
"Beatrix! Kernich!"
he called in each direction, unable to see a thing. He received no answer. Shivering, Dessel rubbed his arms up and down and walked deeper into the cave. If they weren't back now, they must have been granted admission to the Citadel. It had been nearly a full day since he'd seen them. He didn't want to sleep any more. His stomach ached. There was only one thing he could eat, so fee-beetles would be his dinner, his breakfast, and every meal until the princess and the warrior returned. If he removed the insects' head, their limbs, and their carapace, they might not be so bad. It had been many years since he'd tried a beetle, but he knew they would suffice. So he hunted the little monsters. It took the better part of an hour to collect and remove the heads of 10 of them. The first had gotten a solid bite on his palm when he tried to grab it, but he learned from his mistake and collected the others without much issue. He wished he could make a fire to fry them on a stick, but he didn't want to risk drawing attention to his presence in the cave. It wasn't easy to get them down his throat, uncooked, but it was much better than going hungry. He waited, thirsty and cold, halfway through the night before he told himself his companions wouldn't be coming back until morning at least, so he should stop hoping. He closed his eyes and travelled into the other plane. The two battles against the Maros and then the elves were only yesterday. That seemed strange. It seemed like they were weeks ago. He could feel that Lyda was still alive, still so far away. She would remain that way until Dessel returned to Ovira. He was confident he could find her in the other plane once he was closer, and even more confident that he could speak to her. It seemed pointless to try now, but what else was there to do? After hours of practice, he felt that he could push himself deeper into this other plane than ever before. It gave him a sinking feeling in his stomach, like he was starting to fall, which always brought him out with a startle. But there were a few moments that he spent in this place just before slipping out when he felt immensely empowered. The deeper he was, the more control he felt. Over what exactly, he had no idea. First, he had to understand how he could fall into the plane without falling out of it. This made little sense to him when he thought through the feeling, but he wouldn't ignore the feeling itself, even if there was no logic behind it. His power over water and land came to him the same way, a sensation without logic. He would trust his heart now as he had before. However, right now his heart was telling him that Beatrix and Kernich were not coming back on their own. They needed his help. He got up as he sighed, no longer able to focus. Morning had broken. Dessel went out, walking over the human bones that no longer affected him more than the annoyance of walking over uneven ground, and knelt over the frozen lake. He told the water to unfreeze as he collected it in his pouch and drank until he was shivering violently. He brought back a full pouch as he returned to his cave and spent the next hour getting warm through the collection of bastial energy. He waited hours, past noon, and still there were no signs of his comrades. He knew something really had happened to them, as he'd feared. It was time to act. Chapter 4 Beatrix couldn't figure out a diplomatic way out of this as the king commanded her and Kernich to come forward. He pointed to the floor in front of him.
"Stand here and tell us who you are," King Carolto demanded.
She'd been taught never to manipulate her own emotions, so doing so would prevent her from learning to deal with them naturally, but this was an exception. She calmed her nerves on her way past the three people on trial, for she needed to think. She paid little attention to the three behind her as she focused on the king. He had grey hair where he wasn't balding above his forehead. A great long mouth split his face. He had puffier lips and bulbous eyes, as if he'd eaten something that caused an allergy. Given his calm demeanour as he sat with one leg folded over his knee, this seemed to be his natural appearance. The court was silent. She could see the king growing perturbed as his swollen lips twisted inward. Was it possible that this king had a trained psychic somewhere, here, ready to detect lies? There didn't appear to be a psychic near him, only 10 armoured guards who looked as if they had skill with sword, not energy manipulation. She noted an executioner in the corner, his steel axe resting against the wall beside him.
"I'm Beatrix Estlander," she said, "and this is Kernich Chalder. We came from Kiro in Ovira to see you," she lied. "We were hoping to speak with you privately, when you had some time."
The court remained silent, their energy unchanged. All they wanted was to leave. The king, however, smiled as his gaze roamed her body. But he said nothing. The uncomfortable silence pulled out words from her mouth.
"You might know Basin Hiller, the headmaster of the academy in Kiro."
She didn't know when he had visited, but he must have been here before to make a portal nearby. Hopefully he had gone into the citadel then and had wanted the same of Beatrix and Kernich now. Though she was starting to worry this was not the case. The king still didn't reply. Beatrix could feel Kernich about to succumb to his anger. Fortunately, he kept his mouth shut.
"A princess from the castle of Kiro," the king finally said.
It sounded amused.
"I think all of us would enjoy hearing the opinion of a foreign princess about one of our matters."
The audience agreed with yeses and ayes, many speaking with enthusiasm. She felt hope from their energy.
"Look at these three behind you, princess," the king demanded with a lift of his chin.
Beatrix gazed over her shoulder as Kernich did the same. The three on trial were of vastly different ages. The boy was the youngest. He appeared about the same age as Dazzle, 18, if not younger. He looked up from the ground as if ready to plead, the whites of his eyes glistening. The woman had the exact same look. She must have been near the age of Beatrix, 26, though her hair was blonde, not black. Her arms were as thin as sticks. The old man was the only one of the three with an inkling of courage as he held a stern expression. He looked as if he wanted to fight, but he couldn't straighten his back, and his hands tremored. The king continued.
"If it were up to you to choose one, who is least deserving of life?"
What?
Her heart began to race. Beatrix turned back to the swollen-faced king and put on a false smile.
"They all seem deserving of life to me."
"Ah, but you don't know of their crimes. Each of them has admitted in front of a psychic to what they have done. The young man is a thief. The woman is a whore. And the old man can no longer work. One will be killed."
This didn't come as a surprise to anyone in the crowd, their energy showing fear. It didn't compare to the terror of the three people behind Beatrix, who she now refused to look at.
"What is your opinion, Princess of Kiro?"
She couldn't maintain her false smile any longer.
"Only that I'm glad not to be a part of this."
"But you are! You are standing in this court, and I am telling you that you must make a decision."
Kernich spoke.
"If it has no effect on your decision, then what's the point?"
The king's face soured.
"Who are you?" "Kernich, I know your name already. Who are you?" "A high officer of Kiro's army guarding the princess."
The king regarded him with a scowl for a moment.
"I don't like you. You are dismissed."
5 of the 10 armoured guards moved in on Kernich.
"Don't fight,"
Beatrix whispered to him. She didn't hear his grumbled response as he let the men escort him out of the courtroom. As Beatrix felt her own anger surfacing, strength came with it.
"I will not choose. None of them deserve death."
"You were not brought into this courtroom to question the rules of our society, princess. Another insult like that, and you will not be leaving this place in the manner you'd hoped."
He waited for her to respond.
"Then I politely request not to be involved in this matter, as I clearly don't know enough about your society to make this decision. I came to speak to you about other matters, and I will gladly wait outside this citadel until time can be arranged for us to meet."
She wondered if her urge to flee and never return was obvious. She and Kernich didn't belong here. It seemed unlikely that entering the citadel was what Basin had expected. I will take Kernich and go, sir.
No.
Her muscles tensed. Would he kill her if she fought with Psyche in an attempt to escape? She looked over her shoulder, but Kernich was nowhere to be seen. She cursed inwardly. She wouldn't leave without him, but where had he been taken?
Pick someone,
the king ordered. Relax, she told herself. Pick someone if you must and be done with this. She would not turn to look at their faces again, but she couldn't keep her back turned to the terror in their energy. No, she was wrong to think of this as a task that must be done quickly. The king could just as easily use her choice instead of his own, as he didn't seem to care about these criminals. She took a breath and turned around to face them again. A thief, a whore, and an invalid. The thief could have stolen bread to feed himself and still would have been called a thief. Being a whore wasn't a crime where Beatrix came from, unless the woman had betrayed her marriage vows. The old shaky man might have spent his life working for this kingdom. Execution was an extreme verdict for any of these people. She turned back to King Carolto. She was already sick of looking at his swollen face. I must know the details of their crimes, if I'm to form an accurate opinion. The king sighed angrily.
You are not very smart, Princess of Kiro. You've figured out nothing when I've given you everything you need to form an opinion. One of these three must die, but none are murderers or rapists. That should make it obvious to you that the worst offender of each week is killed. The harsh winter doesn't permit us to grow enough crops to feed everyone. It should also be obvious that these three are the worst offenders of this week. It does not matter what the boy stole, because his actions have already put him here. It doesn't matter why the woman has made herself a whore, because her actions have already put her here. Now, do you see?
Why must I choose?
Because I am a fair king. The suggestion of a foreign princess might be valuable.
What would be more valuable is a discussion of trade. We have food we can get to your people so they need not be killed off, and your older citizens can live without fear. The crowd stirred, hopeful energy buzzing.
What food?
The king asked. We can bring grains, rice, and animals to be milked or slaughtered.
And when will you bring these to us?
Carolto spoke as if he didn't believe her. She thought quickly. It was unlikely she had the power to get any of the things she was promising, given her brother's order for her head, but if she somehow did manage to return to Basin, then she and the headmaster could find a way to obtain what these people needed. Then all it would take was a portal to get the supplies here. But she was supposed to keep Basin's ability a secret from these people?
Answer me, and do not lie!
Carolto made a fist as his arms rested on his stone throne. I don't know the exact amount of food or how long it will take, but we will return with all that you require. I only ask that you provide us with apple vines in return. There, she had finally gotten out the details of the trade. Many members of the crowd spoke to one another in surprise. The king turned his attention toward the loudest group, and they quieted. The rest settled down immediately after.
Was it Basin Hiller who sent you here?
Geralto asked her. She still wasn't sure if a psychic was present, but she didn't see the need to lie in this moment. Yes. The king seemed like the kind of man who would put his people and himself through a great ordeal to use someone like Basin for his portal-making ability. We can speak more about this when you have time, she suggested. The king blew out his breath.
I will as soon as you choose one among these criminals. Who deserves to live the least? The young man? The woman or the old? You must pick one. Then I will speak to you about food and apple.
She fell silent. What could she say? Leaving with nothing would suffice at this point, so long as she didn't have to choose.
Who does Kiro value the least?
Carolto prodded.
Thieves, whores, or the useless?
Thieves was the answer to a question phrased in such a way, but it was not the right answer for this trial. He slammed his fist onto the armrest of the throne.
All three will be killed if you do not pick one.
She swallowed bile as she turned around to look at each of them again.
Speak your thoughts,
the king ordered hastily in a shrill voice. It was clear by then that her delays had not and would not work. He'd spoken of apple as if he had it, and would be willing to get rid of it. And why wouldn't he? It sickened everyone who came close. There'd been no known uses for the poisonous plant until Beatrix and her group had witnessed the marrow-strop clusters of it past acryl metal, so it would absorb a tremendous amount of bastial energy and eventually explode. Now everyone with power in Ovira knew what it could do. The elves, the wind knights, Beatrix's brother. But did the King of Tenred know? Now was not the time to wonder. She had to take a life. She cursed Corolto inwardly. He would pay for this. It might not be this year or even the next, but when she returned to Kiro and settled everything that had gone awry at the start of the war, she would figure out the right judgment for this cruel king. There was only one person she could choose and still find enough inner peace to sleep at night. She might see his wrinkly face for the rest of her life, but he was already in pain. He was ready to die, even if he was afraid and the most innocent.
"The old man," she said apologetically. "If I must make a choice, it is him. But I do not believe he should be killed. The old should be treated with—"
"Enough, foreigner! You insult us by claiming to know more than we do. Axe, come here," Carolto said something quiet to his executioner.
Beatrix didn't want to look back at the old man, even though she knew it was right to at least show him her face. A tear rolled down her cheek. She gathered her strength and turned her head. He already had his eyes on her, nodding as if to forgive her. She couldn't look a moment longer without a budding weep escaping. She straightened out and stared at the floor as the executioner walked past her with his axe. The armored guards followed the executioner, carrying three blocks of stone, each with a smooth chunk missing, and told the prisoners to put their heads in position. Beatrix still couldn't look. The king had yet to decree who would die, but she knew it would be the old man. She could feel from Carolto's energy that he had awaited her answer eagerly. If it wasn't going to matter, he wouldn't have cared as much. The fear of the prisoners was overwhelming. Beatrix could feel nothing else, not even her own emotions, but somehow everyone remained silent. Neither the young man nor the woman let out so much as a whimper. Perhaps they, too, knew they would be spared. There was a soft singing of metal. The crowd gasped as the axe sliced through the old man's neck. Beatrix still wouldn't turn around. She heard the woman prisoner crying. She had been in the center close enough to the horrible act to be sprayed by blood. Her crying intensified. Soon she was screaming.
"No, no, no!"
Her voice cut off. Beatrix spun around as the woman's head rolled away from her body. On one side, the old man was being pulled to his feet, his head still attached. But the young man? His head was collected in the same bag as the woman's, by one of the guards.
"Turn around and face me, princess," Carolto ordered.
He'd killed the other too. Why had he done this? She didn't spit at the king, only because she didn't have the saliva in her dry mouth. He smiled. Smiled at seeing her expression. She seethed.
"This amuses you?"
"I am not amused by their deaths. Your face, princess? You act as if you just watched your own siblings die, yet you know nothing of these wretched people."
"And you know nothing of me or my siblings."
Beatrix forced herself to calm down through psyche and took a deep breath.
"Shall we discuss our trade privately now that the trial is over?" she asked. "I'm sure your people have better things to do than stay here and overhear matters you will handle on your own."
She could feel his surprise at her demeanor change. He lost his grin for a moment, but it came back as a crooked twist of his mouth.
"Tell me something first, princess."
It bothered her how he kept using the word as if he didn't believe who she was. Her father may be dead, and her brother the king might put her in the ground as well eventually, but she was still an Estlander.
"What could you want with a poisonous plant?" Carolto asked.
"I don't want the vines for myself. Basin Hiller requires them for something he's creating, a test of some kind. We cannot find apple in Ovira because the Slugari destroy them, so we've come here."
"Because the Hiller knows that I can get anything anyone requires," the king boasted.
"Except adequate food for your people."
"You still haven't explained what Basin plans to do," Carolto continued. "What kind of test could require apple vines?"
If he found out about the explosions, a fourth kingdom could be involved in this war, the elves being the third after Kiro and Tenred. She tried to think of how to answer.
"Say it," Carolto demanded.
I don't know the test myself, she lied, hoping no psychic was there to detect it. He sent me before telling me. The king asked the crowd,
Does anyone know of even a single use for apple vines that doesn't involve making a man sick?
No one spoke up.
Anyone?